All right, everybody, here we go. This episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Unity, your free personal media server. And make it easy to connect your devices and get unlimited access to all your content on the go. Just visit younity.com to get Unity for free. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 283. Thursday, April 14th, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. We are doing things a little different this week, as we are prone to do whenever big device launches. We had a big device launch this week, right, Alex?
I think we did. Yeah, I think we had. Put a drum roll in there if we want. We had the HTC 10.
Yes, we did. So, as we have done in the past, we are going to kind of punt our regular podcast this week and only talk about the HTC 10. We will catch back up on emails and voicemails eventually, I promise. Go ahead and send them in, podcast@androidcentral.com. But this week, we're going to talk about the HTC 10, and we're going to talk a lot about it. So, we've got myself. I have one. We have Alex Dobie in England. He has one.
Hi.
Dan Bader in Canada. Dan, you have one.
I do.
Russell, you don't have one.
No, I don't.
Why are you here?
I feel just because I'm excited. I'm just really happy to have people hear my voice. It lets everyone know that I'm still alive and all of that stuff.
Because we love having you around and you ask really good questions. So by the time you all are listening to this, the review embargo will have lifted and you might notice that we probably haven't put our review up yet. We're going to take our time on that a little bit. Not a whole lot of time. So relax. I'm thinking like, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday or whenever Alex gets done with it.
The right amount of time.
Mm-hmm. The right amount of time. Alex is doing the written review. I'm doing the video review. But I think we've, those of us who have it, I have a really good feel of what's going on with it, what to expect, what we like, what we don't like. It just, you know, it takes a little while to get the stuff prepared, and we don't want to rush it just for the sake of meeting an embargo. So be it. We're also hanging out in the forums, by the way, forums.androidcentral.com. Answering questions there if you have any, and well, let's just get to it. How about that?
Sounds like a plan. So do we should mention before we start off that Dan and I have had it for about 2 days now. I think we both got ours on Monday. Phil, you've had yours a little bit longer, so maybe you've had a bit more time to get an early feel for what this phone is all about. You've been using it full-time since, what, Thursday, Friday? How are you liking it?
Yeah. I've had mine for a week now, so it's been a little while. I mean, let's start with the basics, right? We've got, I mean, it's an HTC device, so we're back to metal. I mean, not back to metal. We've got a big metal aluminum unibody phone. Probably the standout feature in that regard is this giant beveled edge. Is it beveled or bezeled? Beveled.
It's chamfered.
Chamfered?
Yeah.
What's the difference between a bevel and a chamfer? podcast@androidcentral.com. Let us know.
Yeah. It's a different look depending on which color you go for. We'll talk colors, I guess, in a little while, but it's a lot more reflective in the gold and silver versions, whereas with the gray, it's that the whole thing is a bit more muted overall. But you still have this texture change from going from the back, which is very matte, to the outer edge with the bezel or bevel or chamfer, whatever you want to call it, with a more reflective kind of finish to it. And what HTC was saying, and it's kind of true, is that it's meant to be eye-catching, the back of this thing. There are a lot of metal phones these days, and if you look at the back of them, it's just, you know, brushed aluminium or whatever. If you look at this HTC 10, it kind of changes depending on how you hold it, how the light hits it, and it's kind of unique in that respect.
Yeah, you can definitely... I really enjoy the fact that you can see the machining. The precision in here is incredible. You know, the chamfer is what it is. I mean, I think since the iPhone, whatever, 5 or 4 had those chamfered edges, everybody talks about them. But you know, in reality, a chamfer is just a really nicely machined edge. And this has it in spades. And it's actually the largest of that type of design that I've ever seen from a smartphone. But it works. I think it's really nice. It really catches my eye. And as Alex mentioned, the fact that it shifts depending on how you hold it in the light, I think makes it look like a different phone in different lighting situations.
And the other thing is, from a usability perspective, obviously it looks a lot like an HTC One M7. That's the design a lot of people go back to, is the favorite HTC design of the past few years. It also contributes, this bezel on the back also contributes to how you hold it and how easy it is to grip. A lot of the past few HTC phones have been kind of slippery in the hand and a little bit awkward to hold onto, and especially with the HTC 10 and these super, super thin edge walls, you might think it's kind of hard to hold onto. But what we have here is, because the chamfer is a little bit glossier, that's the contact point that your hand naturally makes with the back of the device, and it's kind of easier to grip onto as a result, because there's not that that smoothness to it like there is to the rest of the back.
Yeah, I mean, and the rest of the back is smooth. Like, it's, I hate to say it's not slippery.
But before you go any further, we should mention, I'm using the gray version, which has a very different texture. Yes. You're using, I think, silver, Phil? Actually, both of you are using silver, aren't you? I think.
Yeah, which is more M7-ish than M8-ish or M9-ish. If that helps.
Okay, yeah.
It's a lot more like, it's like a Mac finish. It's a lot like the finish you get on a MacBook or an iMac or something. I like the look of it a lot. It's not one of those just tiny little subtle beveled chamfered whatever edges. Like, this stands out. This is like, holy crap, somebody milled the hell out of this piece of aluminum and it looks really good. It feels good. I like the size. It's a good size.
So have you guys actually seen anything? I can't remember if I see this before the podcast. Have you guys actually seen the different colors in the flash?
I've seen the dark gray one. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the dark gray one as well, and I like it. I don't think it's, you know, you mentioned, one of the first things you mentioned was that it's so fingerprint sensitive. I seriously don't want a phone that needs to be cleaned every 2 minutes just to look good. But I like the actual feel of it a little bit better than the silver one, and I think that's true of the. Of the M9 as well. They're anodized a little bit differently, so they have a slightly different texture, and I do think that affects the way you use it a little bit. But you know, overall, it's a pretty subtle shift.
I think, having used this in the past couple of days, compared to, you know, in a briefing situation where you're kind of manhandling it and holding it in different directions to take pictures, I'm actually not hating the back of it at all. It is more fingerprinty than the, you know, regular aluminium phone or whatever. But I think, if you want to talk about it compared to the black Nexus 6P or any other really, really dark anodized color, you get the same effect there, where if you turn it around, maybe you'll see a few fingerprints, but in daily use, when you're taking it in and out of pockets, it's not terrible. I'm actually, you know, maybe would go back a little bit on what I said about the fingerprintiness of this phone. Using it day to day, it's fine. I have no real issue with it turning into a fingerprint magnet the way the back of, say, the GS7 is a real fingerprint magnet.
I suppose that's glass for you, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Physically speaking, it is almost exactly the same height as the M8. Where's my M9?
The interesting thing for me comparing this to other phones is it's actually not a hell of a lot far off the overall footprint of the Galaxy S7 Edge, which is a lot larger of a device.
And you
get that with the metal, you get that with the larger space at the top and bottom, and the sheer amount of stuff that you have to have in there, but it's still worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when we think HTC phones, we still think dual speakers, and we've got to get over that, because, I mean, it still has dual speakers, but they've changed. They're no longer both facing forward. We've got a fingerprint sensor down there. There's no longer the HTC logo. Russell, are you okay with that? Because that was, I know you loved having that HTC logo down there.
Oh, I was such a big fan of having the HTC logo there, taking up space and doing absolutely nothing all the time forever. It was definitely my favorite thing that HTC ever did.
I did love their explanation for that, though, because it goes back to what I said back when the A9 came out. They need to own their design. Their designs are very iconic. When you look at an HTC phone, you know it's an HTC phone. And that's kind of what they said here. They're like, look, you can't see this thing and not think it's an HTC phone. Why do we need to put our logo on the front anymore?
I don't know. I get what they mean with the back, but you're looking at the front of it, it looks like a phone. I mean, this could be any number of phone designs, right? It's a sheet of glass with a metal trim around the outside.
Fine. Yes. Actually, I'll tell you where that's interesting.
You could say the back is iconic. It is a little bit. I mean, if you kind of follow these things, but the front is, it's glass. It has a button.
I follow these things. I tell you what will be interesting, though. If you see a lot of, like, just generic phone renders these days, they look a hell of a lot like, you know, M8, M9, M7 with front-facing speakers like that. It's really odd. It's almost like HTC got all this free advertising that just didn't work at all. Am I the only one who's seen these?
No, it's definitely, I mean, a lot of times when you get those kind of rendered spin arounds where it does kind of like the rotate around the body of the phone, especially now with so many phones going metal, they all kind of go back to that M7, I think.
Which is saying something. I mean, iconic.
It was a good design.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fingerprint scanner. It's real close to the A9, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's the same actual part as the A9.
They are saying it's like faster than anything. I can't tell if it's any faster than any other fingerprint scanner I've used. I think they've all gotten really good at this point. Anything beyond that is just kind of academic.
I've noticed it being kind of tangibly better than Samsung's. I've always kind of not really rated Samsung's fingerprint scanners for whatever reason. Maybe I just have weird fingers or something, but
they are British.
I mean, I don't know. I just seem to get more errors on Samsung fingerprint scanners than, you know, Huawei or Nexus or HTC. And, you know, very, very, very rarely does this thing fail to unlock for me. It's, you know, as good as the A9s was, which is to say it's probably among the best out there.
I've been on record as not being a huge fan of Samsung's front-facing fingerprint scanner. And I think the difference now is just button versus like capacitive, like physical button that you have to push to do a home button versus this capacitive thing. And I never really used the A9. I had it for a little while. It didn't feel good in my hand. I wasn't a fan of it at all. But this one on HTC's, I think is working well. I think the overall feel and the way you hit it with the way the phone works in your hand is good. I like that I don't have to actually physically push in the button to use it as a home button. I like it. I'm a fan.
Oh, I love the fact that you can turn on this phone without touching, without pressing anything in. That is my biggest issue with the Galaxy S7, because practically every other Android phone with a fingerprint scanner allows you to turn it on just by touching it. I mean, the G5 is a great example of that. The 6P does a great job with that, and it works. It just works every time. It's fantastic.
The bottom of the phone. So let's talk about the speakers, actually. So front-facing, you know, treble speaker. I don't want to call it a tweeter, because if you listen to the two, there's a lot of mix of sounds. But the idea is you have the high sounds coming out, you know, treble coming out of the earpiece, low end coming out of this bottom facing speaker down there on the bottom. It's a little 5-hole grill thing. And it works. If you stick your head up to one speaker and listen to some music or something, you'll hear the highs coming out the high side. You'll hear the lows coming out the bottom end where they should be. It works for me. Are you guys missing the full on stereo speaker experience?
Not so much the stereo, but I think because you have different frequencies shooting in different directions, if you want to call it that, it is prone to more distortion if you're moving the phone around. Like if it's just sitting there and you play music, fair enough, it sounds good. But if you're actually moving the phone around and kind of using it in your hand, you do get a little bit of distortion, I find, with this speaker setup compared to the last gen, the stereo speakers.
Yeah, I think, you know, physics is what it is, and if you have one set of audio coming towards you and one coming, you know, shooting down, unless the phone is actually sitting up, you know, sitting upright and the so-called woofer is on a surface that allows it to expand and act as to increase its surface area, I really don't think that it makes much of a difference. It's not like you're going to get tangible sub 100 hertz bass from such a small enclosure. I just don't think the phone sounds nearly as good as the M8 and M9. The boom sound speakers just don't have that same, even though what did they say? They have independent amplifiers per speaker.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds particularly
You're not good. Pushing that much energy here.
No. It's fine. It's good. It sounds like the best I've ever heard.
Yeah, it sounds like a good smartphone speaker. It doesn't sound like M7, M8, M9 speakers. And I still kind of think M7 might have been the best of the bunch. but it's good. For me, it's plenty good. And I think that it lets them get the fingerprint sensor in there. It lets them not increase the overall footprint of the phone. I'm fine with that trade-off.
Yeah,
they're always going
to
be
trade-offs. I would prefer this setup to something where the phone is like an extra inch taller or whatever it would end up being if you had front speakers on this thing.
Russell, you're kind of our resident USB-C expert. So this is a USB-C phone, and that's good to see. But it's also USB 3.1 first gen. Can you explain to normal people what that means?
Sure. So the USB 3.0 spec kind of has been moving a little bit. It's been changing and supporting more features. And the USB 3.1 Gen 1 spec is really recent. Like it's the one of the more recent versions of the spec. And basically it addresses how much data can be safely passed, how much power can be safely passed to make sure that your phone can be charged faster and can transfer data quicker than what we've seen previously with USB 3.0.
That's it? Doesn't charge any faster, just specifically data?
No, I mean, it'll handle power a little differently, but we're not seeing anything greater than what we've seen with like Qualcomm's Quick Charge for something the size of a phone. If 3.1 were in something the size of like the Pixel C or the MacBook, then we would see, you know, some significant power drain. But the battery size for this makes it so that, you know, it can get to that 70% really quickly. But then, you know, because of things like, you know, thermodynamics and power management, once you get past that 70%, it really has to kind of slow it down and trickle it up.
For the record, Russell wakes up every day waiting to use the words thermodynamics on me.
I do.
What about HTC has this line about the charger and how, I mean, yeah, it's Quick Charge 3.0. Great. We have those, but they say they've gone a little farther. They've done their own secret sauce in the wall wart, and it's got, you know, surge protection. It's got some other stuff. And my kind of question is like, well, why don't they all have surge protection? Why doesn't every, I mean, is it just a marketing line? Is it something you're actively going to notice, or is it something that's going to protect your phone, you know, should something bad happen, and then you'll thank them for it?
I mean, maybe Russell can answer this, but right. I think I was wondering if it had to do with potential for damage with dodgy Type-C cables.
Yeah, basically. I mean, this is taking the power that's coming out of your wall and you know, making sure that it's safely moving across that cable. And what we've seen with a bunch of different cables, I don't know, is the wall wart for this, is it Type-C on both sides?
It is negative.
I haven't seen it yet. Okay, so that's the big thing. A huge part of our of the cable damage that we've seen so far have been in A to C cables, where it's that rectangle on one side and USB-C on the other. Because the USB Type-A ports just didn't have a lot of those safety regulations built to them, and so when people were like rushing to get these cables to market, then they ran into a bunch of these problems. And so this will not make it so that there will be zero problems, but will help reduce the chances for problems pretty dramatically.
While we're talking power, Snapdragon 820, which is kind of standard for these days, right? 3,000 milliamp hour battery. Also kind of the standard amount.
So kind of standard, but HTC was going a little bit beyond that. And they were saying they have their own, and this is where we're going to start getting to cringeworthy marketing terms, which HTC loves to do, power botics or something, I think was the name. And yes. It supposedly has to do with
not power biotics, which is what I thought it was at first, but just power botics.
Yeah. So this apparently is based around low level tweaking to the system, the way the hardware and software interacts to, basically make sure that all the little things that you do on your phone are a little bit more efficient and consume a little bit less power, which is a very non-specific and very marketing-y way to kind of push the idea that their phone uses pretty much the same components as everyone else, but they're getting more out of it. And that sounds great right up until the moment when you actually use the phone.
Why?
Because the battery life is just kind of okay.
It's, for me, it's been on par with, I think, a little better than GS7. It's been on par with the G5 for me. I mean, I kind of think people hear Snapdragon 820 and get these unreasonable expectations a little bit. And it's not like the battery capacity is grossly larger.
Well,
it's
here's the 3,000 thing. Milliamp hours. What kind of bugs me about it is that you have phones from 2014 with 3,000 milliamp hour batteries. that will go all day, and this thing will barely go all day. HTC was claiming 2 days of battery life out of this thing. There's no way you're getting 2 days out of this if you're actually using the phone.
Maybe if you use those low power modes.
And I think this kind of points to my main beef with this phone in general, is that they have just, that there are a few things which have just been way overhyped, which are just okay about this phone. The battery life being one of them.
Dan, are you seeing that up there in your neck of the woods too?
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that Sony was able to get 2 good days of battery life from their Z3 and Z5 lines. And I was easily getting that even on Lollipop. And I don't know what they were doing. I mean, that was running Lollipop, which didn't have the same power-saving features like Doze and App Standby as the HTC 10 benefits from inherently running Marshmallow. So I don't understand it. And they keep falling back to this. You know, the representative that I spoke to at my briefing kept saying, well, you know what? It doesn't need 2 days battery. You'll get it. You'll probably get it. You might get it. I mean, you know, who knows? You could get
nope.
it.
Nope.
But
you'll probably get it. You might get it. All right. You might.
But if you want to charge
it, you'll be able to turn it on.
You know, then you can charge it really fast. And that's cool. And that's the best. And that's amazing. And we won't, you know. And so it's all this stuff. They're just hedging. They're like, we have all these new specs that we can throw at you because it's 2016. But as Alex was saying, they're hyping it up. And if it met that hype, then that would be one thing. But this feels a little bit like Samsung Galaxy S4 era, where they were just throwing everything at you and hoping that some stuff stuck. And I don't think it's sticking.
Yeah, I mean, standby time is really good. I'm finding on Wi-Fi it's pretty good, but there are things like LTE seems to just, you know, doing pretty much anything outside of an LTE will just tank the battery way more than you would expect, and certainly way more than a lot of phones in the past year. And the camera as well. We'll get to talking about image quality and stuff a bit later, but the camera on this is noticeably a big battery sink, and that's the same with a lot of phones, but it is especially noticeable in the HTC 10.
I don't know that I would say it has a bad battery life. For me, it's been normal. It's been...
Okay. It's been... Yeah.
Yeah, it's been what I have seen from... You know, from the GS7, from the G5.
I think my main problem, though, is just how inconsistent it is. It's not like it's just kind of mediocre, you know, not mediocre, but average all the day doing pretty much everything. There are certain things that you will do that will just tank the battery, and other things that will just kind of not. And that's a little bit confusing.
I still say that quick charge is the biggest differentiator for me in the past couple years, though, because I can be on my way, and obviously everybody's, you know, workflow is kind of different, but in the 20 minutes it takes me to drive home from the office to my house, I can get, you know, 20 percentage points back, and that gets me through the rest of the day, no problem. You know, when you're on the road, it's a different story, but it takes less time to charge these things than it used to. So is that the trade-off, and are we being too critical, or are we expecting too much, or are we properly looking at kind of these BS marketing lines a little bit and calling them on it?
Yeah, I think if you say, if you call out 2 day battery life and there is just no way that your products can do that, then you should be called out on it. Yeah, I think it's perfectly reasonable. If this is just getting okay battery life and the, you know, the marketing line is it is exceptional, then yeah, we need to call that out.
So what say bad battery life? I'm not going to say bad. I don't think it's bad. For me, it's acceptable.
Average.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this is just me being spoilt by Galaxy's S7 Edge, which just has a massive battery. But going from this to the HTC 10 is a noticeable regression for me. Like using the GS7 Edge, if I was traveling, whatever else, I would just feel in no danger whatsoever of running out of juice before the end of the day, because it just, you know, again, you have the efficient internals in there and it has a massive battery. So it's kind of been a return to the old days of battery anxiety for me, unfortunately.
Let's get an outside opinion. Russell, are we trying to make excuses for this, or does that sound about right?
No, I mean, I think this is part of the settling that we're getting as far as, and I say settle in a couple of different meanings, when it comes to phone size. I mean, like Alex just said, you know, that if you want something that's got a battery that will go above and beyond what a day has, you're getting something that's kind of huge right now. You know, the we're seeing all of these phones kind of drift back down closer to 5 inches in screen size. And the bodies are really just not much bigger. And so the batteries are kind of reaching that 1 day mark. HTC is way offline saying that they're going to get 2 days out of something like this, which you could tell just by looking at the spec sheet. But I don't think it's a big deal. I think if you can get, 14 to 16 hours out of, pretty much any Snapdragon 820 phone right now, you're doing pretty good.
And there's still a lot going on these phones, right? And now, this is only our second HTC phone. Well, sorry. Our second phone worth talking about from HTC that has a fingerprint scanner. This thing is always polling. So it's always, sitting there awake waiting for your finger. So that's, another little hit on the battery. And that stuff adds up, right?
That's true. I mean, we're not going to talk too much about Huawei, but I guess, Phil and I both have the Huawei P9. The thing that stands out to me is it also has this always polling fingerprint scanner, also has a 5.2-inch screen, also has a 3,000 mAh battery, and I'm seeing none of the battery issues on this phone that I am on the HTC 10.
What's the resolution on that?
Well, exactly, 1080p versus 2K, so that will make a difference. But there is a fairly substantial, noticeable difference for what are two very, very similar phones. Which maybe just shows the extra battery hit that more resolution gives you, and maybe shows that there's something a little bit wonky going on the software side.
Is that a good place to transition to software? You want to talk about software?
That's what I was setting you up for, Phil.
Oh, segue! let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk software. So it's spring. It's time to clean things, your yard, your house, your home, your room, your face. And we can help you do it. Go to harrys.com, use the promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase. You've heard us talk about them before. We're going to talk about them again. Harry's offers high quality razors and blades for a fraction of the price of the big razor brands. Listen to me. I got a beard. I know. You know that. I got to do a little maintenance. I got to do a little cleanup. It's spring. That's what we do in spring. And there's no better way to do it than with Harry's starter set. It's an amazing deal. $15. Razor moisturizing shave cream or gel. I love the gel. And 3 razor blades. And when you need more, they're just $2 each or less. An 8 package just $15. A 16 package just $25. You can't get a better deal anywhere, boys and girls. And they ship right to your door. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to find somebody to unlock one of those things. They send them straight to you. So get started with a set. Again, handle 3 blades, shaving cream, $15, shipped right to your door. Go to harrys.com. That's harrys.com. Use the promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase. Okay, software, HTC 10. Sense?
Yeah, we don't. Sense. We no longer have a numbered version of Sense on this. You look in the settings, you will not find Sense 8 mentioned anywhere. And actually, are there any references to Sense being Sense at all anywhere in the software? I don't think there are.
I asked him about that. It's still Sense. It's just Sense. They're not sticking a number on it.
Yeah, it's on the spec sheet. It's HTC's Android plus HTC Sense, which is what it's always been. But they're stepping away.
But at the same
time,
it's Sense. You know that cartoon Garfield minus Garfield?
Hmm.
It's sort of like that. It's Sense without a lot of Sense. I mean, Dan, you've been using this for a couple days now. Does it look and feel like Sense to you? Because they pared back so much.
No, this is not Sense as anybody using an M7 or M8 would remember it. It has. I mean, the most immediate identifier to me, at least, is the square app launcher. So the little square button that they use for the app launcher, whereas Google now uses the round one. To me, that's always signified Sense, and you go into the vertical app drawer. But now even standard Marshmallow has a vertical app drawer. Other than that, it's so subtle. I mean, you have Blink Feed, which is, I would say, a much more bearable version of what Samsung tried to do with the Flipboard news brief. And even earlier versions of Blink Feed, I think this is just far easier. It's less frustrating. It loads faster. Even the ads are more bearable. Everything about this software screams that HTC made the right compromises in the right places, except in one area. And I miss the HTC Gallery, I have to say it. And even though you will be able to download it from the Play Store, I regret that they didn't pre-install it here. For some part of me just loved that gallery.
What? No ACC gallery? Why, whatever is in its place, Mr. Bader?
Photos.
Google Photos.
Google Photos takes over everything.
You guys aren't a fan?
Google Photos.
Why?
I don't mind Google Photos, but I do share Dan's appreciation for the old HTC gallery. It had some neat stuff in it.
Yeah. Like, and what? You know what? I love Google Photos as a service. I don't like the APK itself. That's my issue.
Yeah, and it's for managing images on a phone, if you're looking at screenshots or wallpapers or whatever else, then Google Photos is fine at managing your photos. Once you go beyond that and you want to just drill down and find an image in a gallery or whatever else, it's really, really clunky to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is that a phone blogger problem, or is that going to be a people problem, you think?
Oh, everything's a phone blogger problem.
Yeah, I don't think most people are going to notice, but I'm super happy to hear about so many of HTC's apps being done completely through the Play Store.
Yeah.
Like that is a big deal for me. Not just the gallery, but but so many of their different apps. I think even the camera app now is updated through the Play Store. Which is awesome. Like I'm a big fan of that whole idea.
And they've been moving to that for a while now. I think the bigger change is that they really work to balance out the duplication of apps as much as they can. I mean, there are times when you launch a phone and there are like six messaging apps. That's a little overkill, but not really. And at least two, you know, email apps, and then you have galleries and photos.
You still have two email apps.
Sure. There's a reason for that. Gmail isn't very good at things like Exchange, right? They're third-party apps that handle that sort of thing much better. I get it. But, you know, we don't have two clocks. Not that you always get two clocks, but they at least actively did what they could to kind of balance that out. I'm trying to find my list of apps that got pared back. I think it's a good thing. I think ultimately the idea of doing this is good and something I would like to see more companies do, even if it's not perfect. And that said, you know, they still preloaded Facebook and Instagram and Facebook Messenger, you know, saying, well, everybody uses those. Well, that's true. But, you know, in the same breath as we're cutting back on the bloatware, you preload three apps like that.
And the irony of saying we're cutting back on the bloatware and you fire up a European M10 for the first time and you have three pages of, do you want to install all these cool apps to scroll through before getting to your home screen? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's better to have that than it is to have this stuff preloaded, but it's kind of disingenuous, I think, to say we're moving away from bloatware. And by the way, you know, you get the, you know, Yahoo tool, the mobile equivalent of, do you want to install the Yahoo toolbar? Do you want to install Ask Jeeves or something like that when you're first going into your new $700 smartphone?
All right, here's
no
the list.
Persistent notifications.
Yeah. All right, here's the list. So you have the HTC dialer, not the Google dialer, not that you'd ever have both of them. I don't think I've ever seen both of them installed at the same time.
I don't think you can have both installed at the same time. Dialer is still very much a system thing, right?
HTC's messaging app, but then you also have Facebook Messenger pre-installed. HTC Clock and Weather, makes sense. Sense Home is this list backwards? This list almost looks backwards. It might be. Chrome is the default browser. There's only one browser now. Google Fit instead of HTC's Fun Fit, which I don't know that anybody actually used. HTC Scribble, I don't even remember what that was.
That was the thing they introduced way back. I remember the HTC Flyer tablet with that pen that had a battery inside it.
Yes.
That was the app that first came in with that eventually continued on.
No more Polaris Office. Instead, you get Google's stuff, which, okay, cool. I mean, it's not like you can't go download any of this stuff, but it's not perfect. And I think, again, they're overselling us a little bit on this, but the idea is good. Even if the execution isn't 100%, and I don't know that it ever can be.
The question,
by the way, if you're,
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you are buying from a US carrier, and that would be Sprint, Verizon, or T-Mobile, they can still do whatever the hell they want. So be prepared for that.
Yeah, what I was,
but no AT&T.
No AT&T. Nonsense. Want. Look, I mean, buy unlocked from this is what you should do anyway. Buy unlocked from HTC, unless you're doing Verizon, I guess. PayPal does financing. Yeah. If you absolutely need to and want to finance this. And plenty, you know, perfectly acceptable way to do it. PayPal does financing on it. I'm all for not buying from the carrier and A, avoiding the bloatware, B, showing them that we don't want your bloatware, so we're not going to give you money.
Especially AT&T.
Especially what AT&T has been doing.
I'm extra, extra salty about this right now, because I've been using the G5 on AT&T. Yep. And it would honestly not surprise me if behind closed doors, HTC looked at their deal and was just like, no, no, we're not going to do that. You're out of your mind.
That was my theory in this, because it, you know, like we've all been saying, the G5, GS7 will have this really obnoxious bloatware persistent stuff in the notification tray. As much as HTC isn't in a great financial position, it would be amazing to think that they just sat down, saw what AT&T was offering, and said, nope, nope, we want none of that. Which is, we don't know how likely that is.
Also might be, AT&T is also the only one that sold the A9.
I mean, AT&T will sell a lot of crap.
They
that's true. They picked up the Fire Phone, any number of BlackBerry 10 phones, just a whole bunch of stuff that you would think, you know, no one's going to buy, and things that weren't necessarily particularly successful. So it's funny.
Dan, the
or we could all be wrong, and there's going to be a blue version that comes out just on AT&T in like a month.
That and stranger things have happened. By the way, Japan has a beautiful red version. Dan,
I don't even want to hear about
the carrier situation in Canada is also a little weird, huh?
It's so frustrating. So this is an exclusive on Bell, which is admittedly a very good provider. In terms of network performance, they're the fastest network in Canada by quite a margin, but it goes back to the fact that once the M9 was replaced by the A9 and the A9 wasn't picked up by any Canadian carrier, I think the companies took a step back and said, do we even need HTC products on our shelves? And I guess they didn't, because they've got, you know, great diverse products from Samsung, LG. You know, if you want something in the mid-range or entry level, you have things from ZTE, Huawei, Moto, Alcatel. So they thought, where does the HTC 10 fit? And for the most part, Bell saw it as a way to promote their network, since they have tri-carrier aggregation, which is, I think, a first in North America. So they can actually aggregate three separate bands in the downlink and get something like 300 megabits per second, which is crazy. So the Snapdragon 820 supports that. And, you know, I think this is a good showcase for them, but I don't think it was a matter of HTC going, we only want to sell on one carrier. It was a matter of only one carrier wanting to sell the phone.
So do you think maybe AT&T just didn't want it? Is that possible, that they would just turn down a flagship like this?
It just seems so unlikely, because AT&T likes and sells every phone they've ever... maybe this is a new AT&T. Maybe they're finally getting it through their heads that, you know, the Fire Phone is not the right phone for their network, and the HTC 10 just isn't the right phone for their network. So why push it if nobody's going to buy it?
Can you buy it directly from HTC up there?
Oh, yeah, for $1,000.
It was like, what, $60 more than what we're paying when you get
it's,
to the...
If you use the exchange rate, it's $60-$70 more, but... They also have that $100 promo for pre-orders that only applies, it doesn't apply proportionally. So we get $100 off $9.99, whereas you get $100 off $6.99, which is not quite as generous.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. That's a very Canadian thing for me to say.
Thank you.
Not a lot I can do for you there. What else? Ooh, so audio. Audio is kind of a big deal. We talked about the speakers already. Software-wise, though, they're talking 24-bit audio. I'll be curious to get this like into Jerry's hands a little bit, because he's sort of our audiophile. I don't know that it sounds grossly better with headphones than a lot of phones, but they do have these optional, and there was a little bit of miscommunication on this. At first, I think we were told it was going to be in-box everywhere, but it's not going to be in box in the US, which sucks, but it will be in Europe and in Asia. So you guys have to look forward to these really good earbuds. Alex, do you have them? Dan, do you have them?
I do. And they're really good. Actually, it's funny, going back to even the basic HTC earbuds that they used to put in their box, they were easily the best bundled earbuds that you would get with any phone. So just building on that to the next level is really impressive. And actually really comfortable as well, with the way the weight is distributed in these things. So, yeah, I'm liking them a lot.
Dan, do you have them or no?
No, I don't have them, but you know, I've always found HTC's focus on audio to be really interesting. They really want people to listen to music and enjoy high quality and high fidelity music on their phones. You know, they push the 24-bit support. They have a really high quality DAC. You know, great amps. But you know, do people really care? I don't know. I mean, we're still listening to 96 kilobit AAC right. files streamed over you know, Spotify or whatever. So does it really matter?
Well, and now they have this other software aspect of it where you can individually tune, you know, per set of headphones. So if you have headphones you listen to on the road versus headphones you listen to at home, then you can, a couple ways of doing it. One is you answer some questions. It's like, how old are you? What kind of music do you listen to? How long do you listen to it? And then it will fill it, or not fill it that way. It will adjust it that way. Or you can actually sit through and go through, I think it's 5 pitches on each ear and then adjust them that way. I found it to be a little bass heavy, which is kind of saying something. But all in all, really good. And I'm really disappointed that they don't have these in the box in the US. You guys are lucky.
So where in the world are those included in the box? Because I didn't understand that from the explanation that you tried giving me before.
China and Europe is what I was told.
And that's it. Nowhere else in the world gets them. Is there nothing in the box at all?
Asia and Europe. I do not know. So I was watching Des from T-Mobile has been doing those crazy unboxings, and he did one in a helicopter and didn't actually show any headphones, which would not surprise me, I guess. These will be an optional purchase, so you can get them, or you can not get them and use whatever headphones you already have. And it's just a shame.
I guess while we're talking
a huge deal.
Audio and headphones and stuff, the headphone jack on this has the fancy amp, or an upgraded version of the fancy amp that was in the M9. Can really, really give some serious power and really drive big wired headphones.
Cool.
Again, yeah, who's listening to 600 ohm headphones on your phone?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Speaking of headphones, they are also working on, and I've actually seen them, USB-C powered noise canceling headphones with JBL. They're not ready yet. Don't know when they'll be ready, later this summer at some point. Don't have pricing. But yeah, USB-C powered. So interesting. Can we start the rumors of no headphone jack next year? Is it too early for that?
Can we just move straight ahead to no headphone jack next year?
That'd be kind of cool. Maybe.
I hope someone does it next year. I hope that, I think they're going to get a lot of pushback. Anybody who does is going to get a lot of pushback because change is terrible. but I'm genuinely a fan of the idea. I want to see who does it first and how well it works.
Russell, for you, what is the advantage of taking that away, though? Because if you could say, okay, the iPhone, if they want to get thinner than a headphone, thinner to the point where a headphone jack would be, you just wouldn't be able to fit it in there. That's probably not going to apply to most Android phones, especially not the HTC 10, which is pretty chunky in the middle. So what's the benefit there for you?
I don't like cleaning stuff out of that port.
I like the idea of... And it actually has not a lot to do with the phone. The idea of noise canceling headphones without the weird battery box that you have to have attached to them when you have these, actively noise canceling headphones. Like I use the Bose ones. They have this little square, you know, rectangular brick that you have charged. So that'd be cool. Be interesting. Other accessories, the Ice View case. We no longer have a Dot View case. And if you haven't seen that, it was this sort of perforated case, you know, the front face had all these little holes in it, and then they would show this very 8-bit looking, you know, image on the front, and that would shine through the holes and you would see it. And it was a cool idea. I liked it. So the problem with that was it was low resolution. You know, there's only so much you can do with it. And to use the camera, you'd have to open up the front cover and just kind of let it flap down. It was a pain in the butt. So now really all you have is a translucent front. You know, shines through and makes the screen bright enough to shine through. It looks a little blurry, which is kind of weird, but you get used to it, and it's good for glances. Or you can swipe down on it twice with your finger to quick launch the camera, and that works without the case, by the way. And then you can take pictures and see the screen sort of a little bit without having to open up the case. Good idea, bad idea?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, dot view was always very limited in the resolution, and yeah, by design. But I think this gives all the benefit of a case that's going to protect the front and back of your phone. You don't have the holes in the middle to worry about, and you can do a lot of really cool things with it. You can just show a lot more information. You can swipe down twice and actually open the camera up and get, you know, a blurry but a reasonable idea of what you're taking a picture of, and you avoid all the hassles of that you would normally expect with trying to take a photo with a case on. So I think it's a good move, and it's a nice case.
This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Unity. Unity is a personal media server that lets you easily access and share all the media and files stored on your computers from your mobile devices. No syncing, configuration, or hassle involved. All of your files are kept secure and private on your own computers. Unity simply creates a connection to let you access everything remotely. Visit getunity.com, that's getounity.com, to learn more and get Unity for free.
I love the idea, but are any of these features at all available when the case isn't on? Like the neat display stuff that shows you the time, or is any of that stuff of it like almost like an always on display like we've seen with some of these other phones, or is it only when this case is on?
I don't think they are. I'm looking right now. Use ice view on or off. If you turn it off, I guess the case won't use the ice view. Why ice? We'll get that.
Because it looks all frosted.
Right, because it looks like you're looking through ice.
Okay, fine. notification options. You can pick which apps will show notifications. Show call history and use the motion launch gesture. So no, it doesn't look like it. The one thing is the motion launch gesture for the camera. The camera. So your quick launch is to swipe down on the screen twice to fire up the camera.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of a bummer, but I do really like the stuff that they're doing with the case. I'm a little curious about price. I don't think I've seen that yet.
$50.
That's kind of a lot, but it also seems like it's kind of worth it from just what I've read. I haven't gotten to touch one
yet. You could just tape a magnet to the front of your phone and get the stuff without buying the case.
You could. So let's embed a magnet in Russell's finger.
Oh, it's happening right now. I'm pulling the scalpel out as you speak.
Or I guess it'd be your thumb, maybe. What would you do?
We'll just every finger. We'll just do it. Why bother misfiring, right?
And then
you need to have options. Oh man, yeah. So that's the Ice View case. It's cool.
Does the hinge get if you turn back the cover? Does it get in the way like the M9 did or the M8 did?
A little bit, yeah. It's flexible to a certain extent, but it's not that, you know, the back of the case obviously curved because the back of the phone is curved, so it's still a little bit unwieldy if you're holding it one handed with the case, but you know the front behind the back of the case.
And it's only available in the one color, right?
I've only seen it in the gray color. Yeah,
it would make sense that it was only available in the one color because that's kind of a specific transparency or translucency.
Yeah, like if you had it in I don't know, transparent red or something, it would look kind of strange.
Bright purple. Actually, in red, it would be like Terminator vision when you turn on the camera. I could be down for that. Get on this HTC.
All right, I just popped it back on. It's not as bad, Dan, as the M8 and M9 case was in that respect. Because I know what you're talking about, and that was pretty bad. But no, it's not bad. I think you can hold it pretty reasonably. But again, you don't have to open it up to take calls or to reject calls, I guess, or you can actually place a call to the most recent caller. It looks a little weird in pictures, especially if you have a phone with the black front. It looks like the earpiece is not centered properly. There's a reason for that, and that's because there are actually sensors right above that earpiece on the right side. If you go to ACC's site, and you look at the Ice View case there, they show it with a white front, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about. So don't freak out when you see that in pictures. As people have done, and actually as I did at first, it looks like, oh, they didn't quite do that right. I like it. Looks good. What else software-wise? We didn't really talk about Boost Plus. We talked about probiotics.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's my theory on Boost Plus. Boost Plus is this app that is designed to make your phone faster, basically, and take care of any number of performance-related things, like clearing up memory in the background. There's a game booster mode. It can tweak game settings to try and reduce the power cost of the game and still having it, you know, looking reasonably well. If you run a game on the HTC 10, it will, a game that it recognizes, it will bring up a dialogue. It says, okay, we've done all this tweaking. Let's launch the game now and basically let us know if it looks okay. Or if it doesn't, you can turn the options off, which is kind of a nice idea. You know, I guess it's doing a bunch of graphical things behind the scenes to try and, you know, not use an insane amount of power when you're playing a game, which is nice. But there are some things that are kind of dubious in here. There's, you know, the auto boost, the boost button that you can press that clears stuff out of memory, which is not entirely clear how that is different from just, you know, opening the recents menu and hitting clear all. There's, you know, clear junk, which is fine, you know, getting rid of apps that accumulate in the download folders or cache or whatever. Fair enough. You can also lock apps away behind a fingerprint scanner, which could be useful. But just like the central premise of having this thing that clears stuff out of memory that is an app that is separate from all the memory management stuff in the kernel is just seems weird and unnecessary to me.
I like the idea a lot of the lock apps. I think that's great.
But the thing that they're pushing, I mean, let's be honest, the reason this is Boost Plus and the reason it's a separate app and the reason it's on the Play Store is a marketing exercise for HTC. It's to introduce people on their Android phones to the HTC brand and say, hey, this is making my phone better or faster, which, okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But then, you know, you're introduced to the brand and maybe you consider an HTC phone next time. But yeah, I think perhaps the problem is you have a lot of dubious apps in the Play Store which do basically the same thing, which have basically no impact on performance and are kind of dodgy. So I don't know. Russell, you know a little bit more about the way the underpinnings of Android work. Is there really any benefit to something that just goes in every now and again and clears things out of memory? Or is that something that just the OS should be taken care of?
It's really something that the OS should be taken care of. Part of me thinks that it might be less terrible for something like Facebook, which has an occasional history of just being really, you know, resource heavy for no real reason. And every once in a blue moon, you can clear memory on that and have it, you know, perform a little better and your battery sucks a little less for that day. But that's not going to universally apply, and it's the kind of thing that you're going to do more harm than good if it's really aggressive, because every time you open an app, it'll recache everything if you're just constantly clearing it, and so that's just going to suck down more data and you know, burn more energy in the process.
I
would have to use it.
Caches in and of themselves are not bad things. They're done for a reason.
Right, yeah, and so, you know, Android's garbage collector is really, really good, like compared to, you know, even most desktop OSs, the way that it handles a bunch of stuff is actually kind of impressive. But it would be, I would have to take a look to see, you know, exactly how some of this stuff is working before I could really judge. But it seems really unnecessary just from the description that HTC gives.
I should say, this isn't, you know, they're not taking Clean Master or whatever and reskinning it. This is HTC's own app that they made to put on their phone and to put in the Play Store. So it's not, you know, it is entirely separate from other manufacturers licensing that stuff.
I'm real.
It does do some stuff that's cool, like the app locking stuff is neat on the face of it.
Yeah,
at least it seems.
I'm real curious to try that, especially on other phones. I guess these will all be available on Thursday. Should be Thursday morning U.S. time. We should see them in the Play Store, so we'll get to try them.
Yeah. I just want to, you know, I really find the way that they refer to junk in this app troubling because what they've done is they've separated the definition of junk into cache, app installers, temporary files, and add files. But if you look at add installers, if you look at app installers, they're actually clearing all of the custom theme APKs that you download from the theme store. So this device is detecting all of the themes that HTC itself offers through its theme store and then deleting them every time you want to use it. So I'm not sure exactly why they're doing that, but they're being super aggressive about anything that they consider, you know, superfluous. And I just find that to be, as Russell was saying, I think the OS should do a good job on its own with this, and it does. Android 6 has had a long time to get that right, and I don't think it needs any user help. And we know how many, you know, if you look on the subway, you see people closing their apps manually all the time. I mean, this is something that people feel good about. It's like you get a dopamine hit whenever you clear your RAM.
This is the thing that I was getting to with when we were talking about this internally, and we'd had the brief on this Boost Plus app. Is this just a big placebo button? Because it is kind of shaped like a big button that you press and things get faster and there's a lightning bolt on it. Are we just looking at a big placebo button here? And, is HTC basically selling you snake oil on its own phone?
Probably.
It just seems really strange that a manufacturer of a phone will have a separate app on the phone that is separate from the operating system that does all this stuff. And it just, from an engineering point of view, it makes no sense to do it in this way.
If you don't want to use it, you don't have to use it. I'm not using it.
I've turned it off. The phone still does phone things.
I do love the idea of being able to lock certain apps behind the fingerprint. That's great.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of that idea.
Especially photos. That's one I've wanted for a long time, actually. Another cool little feature that we haven't really seen before is native support for Apple's AirPlay. Now, when HTC announced it, we did a story about it. A lot of people were replying back, like on Twitter, like, that's not a feature. That's actually kind of a bug because AirPlay kind of sucks.
It's not a bug.
No, why?
I think Jerry took the ROM apart and there is a license in there.
Yep.
And no one you talk to at HTC will explicitly say so, but it's looking very much like this is official and with Apple's blessing.
No, it is official and with Apple's blessing.
Are they saying that?
Licensed. It's fully licensed. Absolutely.
No one would admit to that.
When they say bug, they mean like AirPlay is just not very good. It's kind of janky and like great. It's there. It just AirPlay sucks. I don't know. I haven't tried it.
Well, and you think about it, AirPlay Audio Apple hasn't had new hardware partners for their audio stuff in a long time. And this is just AirPlay Audio. It doesn't do video.
As far as I know, I haven't tried it yet. It will be available Thursday. I like the idea. The HTC Connect is kind of one of those unsung features a little bit that, like, if you use it and it works great for you, awesome. If you're a Chromecast audio user, then, you know, cast, obviously. But the three-finger swipe to send anything to anything DLNA or AllPlay or any of those standards is actually pretty slick. It just kind of depends on what you're using. So if you have an AirPlay-enabled receiver, and it's, like, my wife uses an iPhone, and if that's how we sent our music over to the stereo, then great. That is a really cool way for me to be able to use that same input that she is. It's not the case, but I like the idea and I like the option. Apparently I'm the only one.
No, I like it. I think, I have an Apple TV in my living room, and my receiver actually is an AirPlay receiver as well. So it detects, this phone detects the audio receiver as an AirPlay compatible thing, and I can send it to my speakers in my living room, and it's really good. It's actually one of my favorite features. But Spotify has that built into it with Spotify Connect, so you can get that same. If you have an AirPlay compatible receiver already, you can use it with Spotify. But this just takes it to a hardware level, which I appreciate. As you said, I don't think it's going to have huge support or a huge impact, but for the few people that love it, I think they're going to really love it.
Any other software features you guys have seen and love that we have not talked about?
I mean, there's freestyle really not themes. A whole...
Ooh, freestyle themes. Yes. So HTC has its big theming engine and theming store. Freestyle themes are these crazy kind of kid-friendly sticker-esque themes, but they're not confined to a grid, so you can just stick anything anywhere. How's nobody done that? I haven't seen that before anyway.
Yeah, it's weird.
The kids are going to love it.
Do you think, but this is a very expensive phone. Are kids going to be using this phone? Like, who's this for?
Well, kids are going to be using it on, like, the Desire phone that gets this software in a few months' time, right?
Okay, fair.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but I could totally see this implementation on other phones, yeah. The camera app. We need to talk about the camera app.
We need to talk about the camera in general, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start with the app. They've totally redone the app. It's really pretty, mostly generally easy to use. The one thing I'm dealing with right now is it keeps telling me I'm blocking the laser autofocus. It's real sensitive about that. You don't actually have to have your finger right over it. It can just be because the wide angle it's hitting at. But you pull out from the left-hand side or the top, depending on which way you're pointing the phone. And then you just have options for photo, Zoe camera, panorama, pro, video, hyperlapse, slow motion, selfie, photo, selfie, video, and then settings. And then you have kind of some like subsettings. You can do resolution and aspect ratio.
The settings menu is still kind of a rat's nest a little bit. You still have to do a lot of scrolling to find it. But at least things like HDR and flash and stuff are actually exposed at the top level. There's a button that you hit to turn them on or off. And that's really, really welcome because that's something HTC has not had inexplicably for the past 2 years.
Auto HDR?
That is new for HTC. Always nice to see and works pretty well. I got a little green light that lights up when it's going to do an auto HDR shot. If it's just normal, then the light is off. So nice.
So let's talk about the camera. And that's been a big sticking point for HTC the past, well, 2-3 years, especially as they did UltraPixel. And if you don't know what UltraPixel is, it's a larger pixel size on the sensor that lets in more light and supposedly lets you have better pictures. I think what we've generally found is that the software processing just kind of never really kept up to it, right?
There were a lot of issues with ISO and overexposure and stuff, and you know it would be good in kind of moderate evening light, but then it was just garbage in daylight, and the metering was all over the place, and it was kind of half hardware, half software, and it wasn't helped by the fact that HTC was still getting to grips with the whole image processing side of things.
So, what are we seeing now, Dan? Let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think we have to clarify, though, that there's nothing unique about an UltraPixel. An UltraPixel is a marketing term that HTC uses for smartphone camera sensors that have comparatively large pixel sizes. So
I think what people were getting kind of mixed up about was the fact that the previous UltraPixel, they've only ever used UltraPixel to refer to 2 micron pixels before, whereas now it's 1.55. Yep. And I'm totally fine with the fact that it's 1.55. Okay, it's probably just using the Nexus 6P sensor, which had the same pixel size. It is just a marketing term, and there's nothing really special about it. But I'm okay with them using that name to say, okay, hey, this is our focus. We're focusing on bigger pixels because that's better in low light. And they're not unique in that focus, but UltraPixel is a way of packaging that up nicely in a consumer-friendly way.
And we have a higher total resolution. We're now up to 12 UltraPixel, 12 megapixels of resolution, whatever the width and length number is. I don't even know offhand. So that's a higher resolution this time. So, Dan, what are you seeing when you actually take pictures with this phone?
Yeah, I'm seeing really good results for the most part. Alex alluded to the fact that there are some software quirks that are getting in the way. I don't think it exposes automatically very well yet, and I think a lot of these things can be fixed with a patch. I think for the first time in many years, the HTC flagship is not bottlenecked by the hardware itself. I think that's something that's really important. You know, with the M7 and M8, we had a very low resolution sensor that took good photos in low light, but really didn't take advantage or didn't really work well in daylight because it just didn't have that enough pixels. It only had 4 million of them. With the M9, it overcorrected, not a great sensor, too many pixels in that case. And now we have a good compromise. We know with the 6P, if this is the same sensor, it can take fantastic shots. I think this is the first time that sensor has been paired with OIS, which is great. So we'll see. I mean, I think there's a lot of potential here. I've captured some great photos so far. And we know that there are some patches coming out to fix a little bit of the quirks. So I think, Phil, you've already received it, right? So we'll see.
Yeah, and look, we're not talking... I hate when we start talking about updates, especially before phones are released, because then everybody's like, oh, did we get the camera fix? And without really knowing, here's what's changed in the one I just got.
If you are releasing a phone in a state that it needs a camera fix, you have already failed from now on.
Yeah. And I'm quoting here, fine-tuning and some UI enhancements in the camera app should launch faster.
Right.
For me, it's been pretty good, I think, and I'm still kind of early in that process, which is part of why I didn't want us, you know, hurrying to get this review out on Thursday morning. I've taken some pretty good ones at night, actually, and then I've taken some that are a little soft at night. It seems like it gets aggressive in the ISO.
Going from the GS7 to this, it is a lot more trigger happy with bumping the ISO up, I've found. Whereas, you know, coming from Samsung will tend to have a lower ISO but kind of lean more on the optical stabilization, so you get a crisper looking image. Also, Samsung's a bit more aggressive in the sharpening as well, so you get kind of a kind of crisper looking Samsung image, just a kind of a vibrant and sharp look to them if you ever looked at photos on a Samsung phone before. Whereas HTC's on this are a little bit softer. I'm finding, especially in HDR mode, you do lose a little bit of fine detail. And if you zoom in up close, they are a little soft compared to Samsung's, but a perfectly good camera. The weirdness that I'm finding mainly has to do with autofocus. There's some jankiness. Phil already mentioned the thing with the, you know, it says you're blocking the laser when you're not blocking the laser. That's kind of annoying. And also just instances, especially in macro, where it takes a while to focus. It has trouble picking out things in macro mode.
The focus works differently in this a little bit.
Here's the way I would sum it up in saying that there are instances sometimes in tricky lighting where I can pick up the GS7, I know it's going to nail that shot, and I just don't have that confidence in the HTC 10 yet.
Yeah, I don't quite either. Also, the exposure is not controlled by, you know, normally you would touch on something on the display and that's what you wanted to focus on, and it will set the exposure based on that thing. It does not work like that on the HTC 10, and that's kind of a weird thing that takes some getting used to, and I'm not sure I like it.
Yeah, it's very, very frustrating if you're used to that, especially if you take shots indoors where there's a single light source and you want to adjust exposure based on where you're actually shooting. It just doesn't work that way. So if I'm trying to take a photo next to a window, it just won't. If I tap on the darker spot and it's and I want it to blow out the window, you know, just for an example, it just won't do that. It'll just stay exposed to the brightest part of the scene because it tries to expose based on the entire viewfinder rather than the spot that you're tapping on.
I was taking a picture of my daughter and she was backlit, and you know, normally you would tap on the face to set the exposure to the face and brighten it up, and that usually blows out the background a little bit, but you just kind of deal with it. And you pretty much almost can't do that. Like, you tap it to focus on her, but the light, you know, the exposure doesn't change at all. And that's a little weird, and it's going to take some getting used to. And again, I'm not sure if I like it. I think the tone of my voice tells you whether I like it.
I have noticed actually some strengths to this camera in low light. Like we were saying, it does tend to bump the ISO up a lot. But compared to Samsung, I think we've all experienced the GS7 in low light kind of makes things a little bit yellow looking. The HTC 10, I found it, you'll get a little bit more noise and especially some noticeable chroma noise. But the colors and the light in general is more realistic from the HTC camera than the GS7, I think.
It's going to be nice. A good fight. Yeah,
well, that's a good news.
And again, we've got a lot of good cameras out there between the 10 and the G5. By the way, what are you guys calling this? Because like, we can't say M10 because it's not M10.
Oh, I don't. Mine has M10 printed on the back next to the regulatory info. It's the M10H, and I'm going to call it the M10 because it has M10 Fine. Printed on it.
I'm with Alex. It's now officially the M10 as far as I'm concerned. It's written on a phone. That's it.
All right, then I'll quit feeling bad every time I say M10, which I've been saying a lot.
Saying that if you say the 10, you're just a terrible human being.
It sounds like an interstate, like a highway, because that's especially like California, that's how they refer to them. Yeah, you're on the 10.
Not but so as a writer, it makes it really hard.
Mm. I know, exactly. More blogger problems. Anything else about the HTC 10 that we are forgetting?
Is this the first device that uses adaptive storage that you guys have used?
Adaptable storage or adaptive storage?
No. So the A9 had it. I believe like Android One phones have it as well. Kind of interesting. It doesn't default to it. I think I've put a couple of SD cards in this thing and it's not yet given me the menu. It's always just let me use it by default as removable storage. I'm not sure if you guys have had any different experiences.
Well, I mean, you don't want it reformatting the card without asking you first.
No, but Russell, what I'm saying is normally you put an SD card in a phone with adaptable storage, it will ask you if you want to set it up as adaptable storage. I did not get that option on the M10.
Now, I have found one reason why you might not want to, and I need to experiment with some more apps. And Russell, maybe you can explain this. I know Jerry can, because he and I talked about it. I've been playing with that LG 360 cam for 360 degree videos and photos and stuff, and I cannot save them onto the M10. It will not save to the adaptable, because the whole thing's done as adaptable storage, and because of the way things get formatted and folders and stuff like that, like, it just freaks out and it's like, I don't know where to save this, so I can't save this. And Jerry explained it to me in a way that made sense, but it's kind of like, well, okay, but it was supposed to work.
Yeah, I think the app can see the two different storage points, even though the OS is treating it as one, and so the app just isn't built to handle it. Jerry may have more information there, but that was my suspicion when you were complaining about it before. And it sucks. Like, there needs to be, that needs to never be a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But it could be, it could either be a way, the way that HTC is implementing adaptable storage, maybe there's something there that's a little weird, or it could just be that, this app has got something that it shouldn't as far as how it saves files. Either one of those things could be true, but it definitely shouldn't be happening. And hopefully whatever it is gets fixed before we start seeing more people using either.
By the way, just because we didn't mention it, 32 gigabytes of storage out of the box, something around like what, 21, 22 actually available to you? I think it's about
23-ish.
23.
Which is delightful.
Yeah. Is that good?
It's all, anything that's not 16 gigs is awesome. If you release a 16 gigabyte phone from here on out, regardless of who you are as a manufacturer, I'm going to say mean things about you and probably your family.
Well, let us know how you really feel.
I will.
What else? Anything else? Oh, front facing camera, by the way, 5 ultra pixels, but with OIS. That's one of the first.
Are you noticing a difference there?
I think. I don't know. I don't take that many selfies.
You should. Do you have an amusement park near you?
I do not. I do have kids. Damn. I'm just gonna give them the phone and.
Oh, that doesn't work.
What were you gonna do?
Or like, maybe put one of your girls on your shoulders.
I can do that.
And have them take selfies while you jump around.
Sounds like a horrible idea. Let's do it.
Yeah, worst case scenario is you do what I did to a phone earlier this week. I think it's worth it.
Oh, is that how you did it?
Oh. No, that's not how I did it. I would have never told any human being that phone had ever broken again if that was how I did it.
Because then
that.
I really want to see the pictures. I'm just flipping through again. Blink Feed is still on here. I'm not going to be using Blink Feed. And it doesn't even do, Instagram and Facebook anyway.
Yeah, so Instagram is bizarrely gone. Supposedly, to get Facebook working, you need the HTC Social plugin, which is not yet updated for the M10, which, okay, fair enough, if the phone isn't out yet, it's another reviewer problem. I would be amazed if Facebook having its, there's this agreement to have Facebook's apps preloaded on the phone, and then their apps just don't work with Blink Feed. That would seem very strange. So I guess an update probably would be coming to address that.
I'm still not going to use it.
And actually, we should mention BlinkFeed is, as of the A9, has this weird News Republic thing built into it, which is very branding heavy.
Well,
and actually not. Okay, it's always been News Republic, but now it's built into their app, and it looks more like some money's probably changing hands here kind of setup than the BlinkFeed of old, is very much.
No. News Republic always powered BlinkFeed from day one.
It did. But now it is more overtly obvious, and it looks less like an HTC experience as a result. Like, they've just bolted someone else's thing onto it.
Yeah. But it's always been.
Which I'm cool with, because that way, if it's broken, you can blame the people who are actually responsible.
I need to figure out how to turn it off, actually. I'm not entirely sure how to turn it off. I'll have to find that.
You can never turn it
on. I ain't going to use it. I'm okay with the launcher. I haven't switched launchers yet. I'm okay with the keyboard. As anyone who's been chatting with me for the past week knows, it's not as quick to insert spaces between words as like SwiftKey is. So I've been running a lot of words together and spelling things worse than normal. But it's pretty good.
I guess the bottom line for this would be... and probably the biggest problem for the HTC 10 on the whole is it has to sell at this $700 mark in a world that also contains the Samsung Galaxy S7.
Yes. That's going to be a problem for everybody, not just HTC.
It is, but I think for HTC, with their whole branding push behind this being, you know, a perfect 10 phone and being just great at everything, which you absolutely need if you're selling a phone at this price, I'm not sure that this, you know, by default sits at that same level as the GS7 overall.
It doesn't. I can't get over that. I mean, I'm trying to.
That's not to say it's a bad phone.
It's not. It's just that Samsung stepped up so far this year.
That's what I said about the G5 as well. Like LG's made a pretty good phone here, but Samsung's just playing on another level.
Totally.
I think you guys are nuts. I think there's only one thing that makes the Galaxy S7 more worth it to me, and that is that it is so waterproof. And the M10 is not in any way waterproof.
I really am a fan of the scaled back sense and working with what Google's done. By the way, the notifications and quick settings are Google's, and for me that's a big deal because I think everybody else other than Google has blown that and just takes up way too much space with their own crap. Like visibly, you know, just gets in the way of notifications. So what good is that? I'm all about the way HTC is selling it, and, you know, selling it outright, selling it unlocked, selling it themselves outside the carrier system, unadulterated. That's a big deal. That's an important thing. I'm all about getting the $100 off at first. That was cool. Oh, what about, I was asking this in the forums yesterday. So you get, I mean, at first $699 or $999 in Canada seemed like a lot of money. And maybe when you put it side by side with the GS7, it is a lot of money. It's not a little amount of money, but you know what I mean. But you get a year's worth of the horribly, horribly named protection. It has to that yeah. You have to say it like that, by the way. I mean, so what's that worth? Like how
you
much
really don't.
How much of the price do you take off for something like that? Samsung has I think it's called Protection Plus, where you get 2 years of coverage on its top end phones for $129 extra. So they don't do a free one like that. So it's $129, but for 2 years. So does that, I don't know, how much do you think that takes off the price? How much do you think that's worth?
I don't know. I mean, what's the average phone insurance policy? It's like $7 a month, at least here. So is it worth $7 a month for, I mean, here it's 12 months. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a decent deal.
For me, that tempered the price when I started thinking about it in that way.
Fair.
It helps some. Anything else you can think about for this?
Oh, yeah, display.
Yes, Quad HD, like, Super LCD 5.
Like using it outside.
Is it okay outside. I think, again, I've been spoiled by the GS7, the fact that GF7 yes. has this crazy overdrive mode that will activate in direct sunlight. You very much, yep. going from a Samsung phone, notice the lack of it when you go outside. I think it's decent enough outdoors. I wouldn't, you know, go crazy about daylight performance, but you can see it. It doesn't look terrible. And yeah, indoors it looks just as great as every other QHD display.
Yeah, LCD just isn't quite as good as the AMOLED panels now, I think. It does have some slightly weird polarization, so you see a little bit of color shift as you move it back and forth. We talked about polarized sunglasses before with the G5, and it is very much like that for me, except it goes pretty dark when I'm wearing polarized sunglasses and holding it in portrait, you know, vertically. Switch horizontally, and I can see it real well. That's kind of a thing for me, a little bit. It's very annoying.
Now, is it better or worse than LG's display?
I think it's better than LG's.
Like, when it comes to brightness?
I think it's a little better. Not grossly so, and again, you know, the GS7 display just hits it out of the park. But I think it's better than the G5 display. It's still a little quirky, but not bad at all.
Let's not dismiss the G5's display, though. I mean, it's pretty darn good. It's not the best in class, but I think they've done a fantastic job. I also love...
I mean, I can't use the G5 display outside.
At all?
I just... You not really.
Supernatural,
I mean, like,
sun?
Even with the brightness...
The G5,
yeah, basically
the G5 for me had some really aggressive auto brightness, and it's almost the opposite on the M10 where it's almost aggressively bright instead of too low.
Really? Because I think with the auto brightness on the M10, it's for me it's been more the fact that it just is a little bit wonky in both directions. Like it doesn't know whether it wants to get too bright or too dark. It never really seems to find that happy middle that which is where you want auto brightness to be. But there's definitely some weirdness going with auto brightness, which doesn't help the screen on this thing at all.
And that's something I think they can tweak over time if they want to.
Again, a lot of the weird things about this phone are potentially fixable in software. The camera stuff with focusing and the laser and auto brightness and even to a certain extent battery life is stuff that could be addressed in software. But I guess we just have to take things as they are now because that's presumably the condition the phone's going to be in when it's sold in early May.
Okay, well, I think that's going to do it. I'm just flipping through the specs real quick. See if we miss anything we want to talk about. Weight-wise, it's comparable with the other HTC phones of the past couple years, 161 grams. It's not a light phone at all.
Yep, metal will do that.
It's right up there. Okay, I think that's it. We will for sure have more on the M10 in future podcasts. This won't be all we talk about it, but we did want to do a special one since it's out this week and only talk about it. So next week we will catch up, hopefully on emails and voicemails. Let you know I'm on the road, so things might get weird. Andrew's not here. Alex is here. Russell's here. Dan Bader's here. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
Andrew, Jerry, wherever you guys are, thank you guys. Everybody listening home, thank you guys. We'll be back to a live show when we're back to a live show. That's it. See you.
See you later.
Later.
Bye.
Still here? Good. So I can tell you that this episode of the Android Central podcast was brought to you by Unity, the free personal media server. Unity makes it easy to connect your devices and get unlimited access to all your content on the go. Just visit youniti.com to get your Unity for free.